People are seeing day and night the slaughter. As I sit and do an interview with you, people are dying. Bombs are exploding. Who knows who's next? Will they target our house? Will they target a few streets to the south? Will they target the studio that I'm in? Will they target? Who will they target? Who will they kill next?
Hi, I'm John Kiriakou, and welcome back to Deep Focus. Today, we're revisiting a friend of ours, Dr. Mohamed Marandi, who has long been a friend of the show and a friend of mine. He is a professor of Orientalism and English Literature at the University of Tehran. He's speaking with us from Tehran, and you can only imagine what the city is like right now. Mohamed, without any further preambles, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for taking the time to be with us, especially with everything that's happening today.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and it's always a pleasure being on your show, John.
Thank you. Mohamed, can you tell us what life is like today in Tehran? It seems like you have just relentless missile strikes and ships firing from offshore and drones and rockets. What is day-to-day life like?
Well, because a lot of the targets are civilian infrastructure, it is pretty terrifying for a lot of people. We have a large number of double tap strikes where they bomb a square or an apartment building or some high-rise building. And then when people go and rush to help and first responders are trying to find survivors under the rubble, they strike again. And this has happened quite often. One of my friends was a witness to, was a witness to a double tap attack in Ferdowsi Square in the city center of Tehran. I spoke to a journalist for Drop Site News, who's Iranian, who lives in Iran, spoke to me or sent me a message and told me that he was in a square where the same thing happened, and they killed 20 people because they went to help the injured, and they were trying to find people under the rubble. So these sort of massacres are taking place. The United States and the Israeli Air Force, they carry out carpet bombing. I posted a video of one of their strikes on a densely populated neighborhood in Tehran. It was utterly vicious. And these are very dark times for humanity. Of course, it's an unprovoked war. You wouldn't know that if you watch CNN or the BBC or read The Guardian or read The New York Times or Breitbart or Fox News. You would think that somehow Iran started this war, even though this is the third time that the United States engages in war with Iran. The first time was, of course, after it supported Saddam Hussein for many years and allowed it to obtain chemical weapons through Germany. Near the end of the war, they, in order to save Saddam, because back then he was their ally, they entered the war, destroyed Iran, attacked Iranian naval ships, destroyed Iranian oil platforms, and downed an airliner, killing 290 civilians. The second time, of course, was 8-9 months ago when the Iranians and the Trump regime were negotiating, and he was secretly conspiring to carry out a blitzkrieg attack. And of course, this would be the third time that, under the cover of negotiations, Trump was, along with Netanyahu, planning an attack to slaughter Iranian people. But if you look at the news, any major news outlet in the West, you would never imagine that this is what's happening, the unprovoked war where they murder leaders, where they murder scientists, where they murder academics, where they murder families, slaughter entire families, wipe out entire apartment blocks. And they're doing it simultaneously, by the way, in Lebanon as well as we speak. So it's a regional massacre. But people are very steadfast, and I'm quite stunned. I predicted this. I believed this would be the case, but I didn't quite. I didn't think it would be like this. Every night, and sometimes during the day, but every night across the country, people gather in cities in tens of millions. And in Tehran, they gather not in one place, but like in 20 or so places, each tens or hundreds of thousands. And during the first two nights where these gatherings began, I posted the ones in Tehran, like clips from different areas in Tehran, so people could understand, if they put them together, what a massive crowd it would be. And these people were under bombardment. The Trump regime was bombing them. They're firing missiles. And in some of the clips, you could see the anti-aircraft or anti-missile systems working, but men and women stood their ground. I found that to be extraordinary. I've never seen such a thing before in my life.
I have to agree with you. And I want to add something, too, that it is a war crime to strike civilian targets. It's a war crime to rocket a school and kill 160 children. It is a war crime to sink a naval vessel and then refuse to aid the survivors. So this isn't just, you know, so many of us yell about the Israelis.
And that naval vessel was not armed. It had gone to India for a naval program that different countries were involved. And they were just men on a ship. And so they massacred them. They bombed many hospitals. On the first day in Tehran, they bombed a very large private hospital, the Gandhi Hospital. They targeted the IVF clinic, so many women won't be having babies. The whole hospital has been emptied, and it's private. I mean, no hospital is allowed to be, you cannot attack them, but it's not even state owned, or it's not owned by government. And the massacre of the girls on day one, there are two massacres on day one. One is less noticed because of the fact that the Trump regime targeted elementary school girls, killing 168 of them and 10 or 20, I think 20 of their teachers and staff. And, well, you know, which we shouldn't be surprised, because the Epstein class, they rape and murder girls, so why not bomb them? And then a few hours later, they bombed a gymnasium where young women were playing basketball, where they were playing volleyball, and they massacred them too. But that was just day one. I mean, it's been going on every day. And today, they, among many other places, they bombed factories, a pharmaceutical factory, I hear they bombed just about half an hour ago. There was heavy bombing about an hour ago, half an hour ago. And apparently they bombed a pharmaceutical factory in during those strikes. They bombed the state national stadium, the Olympic stadium in Iran this morning. The thing is, John, that they failed to destroy Iran's military capabilities, the underground missile cities, the underground drone cities, the underground factories for missiles and drones, because they're deep underground. And I think, you know, after 5 days and there's no let up on the Iranian side. They're very frustrated, so they're taking it out increasingly on ordinary Iranians. And so we're seeing more and more carpet bombing rather than it's becoming less targeted and more carpet bombing. And in these strikes, they bombed the National Emergency Service building. They bombed the Red Crescent, the main Red Crescent building. I mean, they're just like during the riots a month ago when their terrorists and their trained rioters were slaughtering people on the streets and slaughtering police officers. If you recall back then, they were targeting ambulances and fire engines. Now, back then, fire trucks, back then, I was thinking, well, they are doing it so that the buildings would burn and that the injured would die. But now I'm thinking that that is probably true, but they were doing it for today so that Iran would have a shortage of ambulances and a shortage of equipment to put out fires during the wartime period, because they destroyed an awful lot during those two days of riots.
And in fact, they just started bombing specifically targeting police stations, with between 30 and 40 police stations hit just in the last 24 hours.
Yes, the police stations that they hit, they're just local police stations that people for neighborhoods. So what they're trying to do by destroying all the public facilities and murdering public employees is to destroy the fabric of society, to break society apart. That's the objective of the Trump regime. And it's like what they did in Gaza, the same thing. And of course, the Western media looks away, just like back then. At first, they would make excuses. They would blame the victims. When the first hospital was bombed, they tried to pretend that the resistance did it. The second time, they pretended that there were tunnels underneath. Then the third time and the fourth, after three, four times, they just said, forget it. We'll just look away. And it got so bad that, if you recall, they went into one hospital and unplugged the incubators and let all those infants die. And no one in the Western media cared. So this is where it is. This is where things stand. And right now, as we speak, they're doing the same in Lebanon. They're about to carry out carpet bombing in southern Beirut. They've told everyone to leave the city. And you wouldn't know it if you watched Western media, and there's no outrage or anything like that. So the West is indeed, John, Epstein land. It is the land of Epstein. It is the land of the Epstein class. And the media is owned and controlled by the Epstein class. The state is owned and controlled by the Epstein class. There are no laws. There's no international law. They've created the law of the jungle. The people who take little girls and do what they do and did what they did, they are the ones who are now slaughtering people across the board in our region. And the entire Western media, they're like cheerleaders.
Mohammed, I want to ask you about the Supreme Leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, his assassination and the killing of virtually his entire family. I gave an interview recently in which I equated the assassination with killing the Pope. If you kill the Pope, you're not going to bring down Catholicism. They'll just appoint a new Pope. If you kill Ayatollah Khamenei, you're not going to bring down Iranian society or Shiism. They're just going to appoint another grand Ayatollah, another supreme leader. Am I missing something? As an analyst of the West and of Western politics, what can you tell us about what the American and Israeli goal might have been in the killing of Ayatollah Khamenei?
Well, first, let me tell you a bit about him so that your viewers can know him a bit better, because he's so widely demonized. Before the revolution, he came from a very poor family. His father was a high-ranking religious scholar. He went to jail six times, I think, or he went to jail multiple times. I think it was six times, but I have to check on that. And he was tortured. He was taken to the worst prison of all, that was in central Tehran for the special prisoners. After the revolution, he was the youngest leader of the Revolutionary Council. But when the war started and Saddam invaded Iran at the behest of the West and the Soviet Union, he went to the war fronts, even though he had no military experience. He had no military training. And he went to the war front and learned how to fight while fighting. Then there was an assassination attempt on him, and he was badly wounded. His right arm, he was not able to use it afterwards. And he was elected president. And during the final months of the war, when the U.S. entered the war on behalf of its ally, Saddam Hussein, and the war fronts became unstable, he quit Tehran as president and went to the war fronts. I saw him in the war fronts, in the southern fronts. That's where I saw him, during the most difficult days of battle. So, and he was a target, obviously. He was the president, but he was always on the fronts. And he was a person who had no fear. And he was fluent in four languages: Persian, Arabic, Azeri, and English. His knowledge of literature, Persian, Arabic, Azeri, excellent. The most famous Azeri poet in contemporary history in the last few hundred years, Shahriyar, was his close friend. His father's from Khamene, which is an Azeri city in Iran. So his knowledge of English is something that I'm aware of personally. He's read novels in English. He's read political material in English, and so he's an intellectual. He was an intellectual. And on the day of his assassination, the reason why he was in his office, and his office is beside his home, is because during this whole period, he was telling people the people around him, that he's not going to leave. And he said that many ordinary Iranians have nowhere to go. They're struggling. And so I'm not going anywhere. And that's how it's been from the beginning. So if you recall all those childish stories that these Persian media outlets that are funded by the CIA and Mossad and other intelligence agencies, they spread rumors about him, where they've taken him, where he's hiding. The whole time, he was at home and in his office. There was no intelligence coup. There was nothing. There was just a man who was not afraid to die, and who wouldn't leave because others couldn't leave. So by killing him, by murdering him, they made him a martyr. The most important scholar in Shia Islam, the most important religious political figure in the entire world, because he is not just the Pope, but he's also a political leader. So his followers and his supporters are outraged, not just for the insult and the aggression against their religious leader, but also against their political leader, whose beliefs were social justice and emancipating the oppressed across the world. That's why he always supported the resistance in Southern Africa against the apartheid regime. That's why he supported Cuba, even though it was a communist state. He gave it his support, even though Iran had its own problems. its own economic problems. We had maximum pressure sanctions, but we have always been trying to support Cuba and Venezuela and Nicaragua. Why? Because they were considered to be oppressed under the boots of imperialism. And the same is true with the Palestinian cause. And that is basically his sin. At home, his policy has always been, he supported the private sector, but his policy, because we've had different presidents with very differing economic and political views, he would always insist not to let the dispossessed and the financially vulnerable, not to let them suffer, to support them, and to strengthen them. And also, one characteristic of his followers is that they're now becoming increasingly like him. Now they are prepared to die in these. I think that probably the reason why every night on the streets of Tehran and other cities, you see these people standing there as they're being bombed and refraining from moving is because they've been inspired by him, by the fact that he was not afraid to die. And so I think that this is going to make it even worse for the Trump regime. And I think that the steadfastness of the Iranians is going to increase even more than it would have if he was alive, significantly more. And you know, John, I said this already to a couple of people. I've had three instances of people contacting me, students, who told me that they were involved in the riots. Not among, they were not like those who are the terrorists and who were killing people or who were burning down buildings, but they were, you know, they were excited and they were foolish. And I guess they did some stupid things. I didn't ask. But these three people, I don't know them well, but they're from my faculty. A couple of them I don't think I've met before. I'm not quite sure. I mean, I've been thinking about it today because I spoke about it a couple of times. I'm not quite sure. You know, but in any case, two of them were quite emotional. And they were saying, what can we do? How can we make up for what we did? How can we help? And of course, I didn't know. I said, like, go speak to this person or that person and see what you can do. But these young people who were influenced by this Persian language media apparatus, which is huge, I mean, hundreds of television channels, thousands of trolls. They have troll farms everywhere. Just in Albania, thousands are working in one troll farm. Tens of thousands of Iranians are on the payroll. And so a lot of these kids, these young kids, were influenced by this Persian language media empire, and who were influenced by these fake narratives of the West loving human rights and how all your problems are because of your government and your state and the Islamic Republic of Iran. They saw with their own eyes what the West does. And 100 years of books and philosophers teaching them in class and political scientists telling them about the crimes of the United States and the Israeli regime, it couldn't have had this effect. People are seeing day and night the slaughter. As I sit and do an interview with you, people are dying. Bombs are exploding. Who knows who's next? Will they target our house? Will they target a few streets to the south? Will they target the studio that I'm in? Will they target, who will they target? Who will they kill next? And it's all just by chance. If you look at the places that they bombed, often poor neighborhoods, working class neighborhoods, middle class neighborhoods, to the east of the city, to the west of the city, to the north of the city, to the south of the city, everywhere. They just slaughter. And so these young kids, except for, I'm sure some people are, you know, they'll always close their eyes to reality. But the decent ones, they've all seen the reality of the United States. And so I think that the United States is going to have to wait another decade or two in order to create another generation of that has a substantial young set of people who believe their nonsense. But hopefully by then there will be no more American empire. My hope is that it will end in a very short period of time.
Mohammed, the administration here in the United States is very clear that it wants nothing short of regime change. At the same time, all Iran has to do to win is to survive. How do you see this ending? Donald Trump said a couple of days ago that he could see carrying out these attacks for weeks. Well, attacks for weeks isn't going to change anything. Iran is an enormous country. It has 92 million people. Its economy is diversified even under sanctions. Its military is spread out. It has a navy. So what does defeat for the West and victory for Iran look like to an Iranian?
I've been informed today by a significant political figure that Iran plans to continue this war until the midterms in the United States. And they are planning to force the United States to leave. And the more this war escalates, the darker it becomes for U.S. allies across the region. For the Arab family dictatorships in the Persian Gulf, this, if it continues for much longer, they won't survive. Remember, these are all dictatorships, family dictatorships. And the passport holders in these small entities are sometimes 10-15% of the whole population. So in the Emirates, you have 1.4 million people who are Emiratis. The rest, the 10 million or so, I guess, they're there. But if the state collapses, those slaves and indentured servants and the underclass, they may have something to say about the future of the Emirates or Qatar or Kuwait and so on, and Bahrain. So if this war lasts much longer, I don't see how these entities survive. None of them have a history. They're not civilization saints. They don't have that sort of identity. None of them have an ideology. I mean, the Iranians have Islam. And of course, Shia Islam has a particular essence to it. It supports the oppressed. It fights against the oppressor. It's steadfast. It has no fear of martyrdom for the right cause, to support the downtrodden. And you know this is heavily influenced, of course, by the Prophet, his son-in-law, and of course the martyrdom of Imam Hussein in Karbala, and his sister, and the role that his sister played. I mean, if the American elites had read something about Imam Hussein, they would have thought twice before taking on Iran and the axis of resistance. So Iran will be steadfast, and they will be bloody, because this Epstein regime is ruthless. But Iran will see this through, and it will do what it takes. And those proxies of the United States, they will pay the price if the United States keeps pushing, because they're all complicit. They all host U.S. bases. The U.S. conspired against us through those bases. As we speak, they're using their airspace. As we speak, they're using their territory to fire missiles from the ground, from the surface to Iran. So at the moment, the Iranians are focusing on U.S. assets and assets linked to the U.S. But it could get worse. If the Iranians, if for whatever reason, the Iranians and the United States get into, if the war between them escalates, there will be escalation in Iraq, there will be escalation in Yemen, and I think that you will see the destruction of all the tankers that are now stuck in the Persian Gulf, and you will see the destruction of oil and gas installations. And that will bring down the global economy.
It will. It will. The Strait of Hormuz being just the start of something like that. Mohammed, the Washington
Post
today.
Just one thing, John. Just one thing. Iran is shutting the Strait of Hormuz without destroying anything to warn the Americans that this is what is going to happen. And Trump now says that he's going to open the Strait of Hormuz. He doesn't have a chance in the world to do it. His ships are far, far away out of fear of Iranian missiles. His planes are far away. That's why every time they bomb, they have to refuel and refuel again to get back because of Iranian drones and missiles. So Iran is in full control. There's nothing that the United States can do about it. And therefore, if push comes to shove, then you'll see the price of oil go to, what, $200, $250 a barrel? And then when the markets crash, then everyone will be wondering who did this. And even the MAGA people, who obviously have no moral principles, because forever wars are okay, hiding the Epstein files is okay, even shooting white people in the face are okay. All that's okay now. But when they lose their jobs and their factories, the factories that they work at collapse, and the businesses go bankrupt, and the price of gasoline becomes unaffordable, and they have no money to pay for the gasoline, I think they'll be trying to figure out who's behind this.
Mohammed, the Washington Post asked a rhetorical question on its front page today. It said that Russia and China are close friends of Iran. Why aren't they helping? First of all, are they not helping? And second, can you comment on the current relationship, whether it's diplomatic or military, between Iran and Russia and China?
There's no doubt that they're working together, they're cooperating. Iran is purchasing weapons and doing business with them. I have no doubt. I don't know any details. But the relationships between these two countries are quite good. And by the way, the Russians are benefiting big time. While Europe is paying extra prices, a higher price for energy, and the price of gas is going up even faster because of Qatar than the price of oil. And this is really bad news for Western countries.
I want to come right back to that, but first we're going to take a quick sponsor break. Thanks for bearing with us. Right now we're watching two major flashpoints unfold at the same time. The takedown of El Mencho has thrown Mexico into chaos, and U.S.-Iran tensions are escalating faster than anything we've seen in years, all the way to full-out war. Here's what most people don't realize. Every time global instability spikes like this, one asset surges: gold. It happened after 9/11. It happened during the 2008 financial crisis. It happened when Russia invaded Ukraine. And it's happening again right now. Well, there's a free report now called the Global Crisis Playbook that lays out exactly what's going on and what it means for your retirement. It includes a step-by-step guide to moving your retirement into physical gold, tax-free and penalty-free, plus a 7-point checklist experts say every retiree should complete before the next crisis hits. I don't think you're going to hear this on the evening news, but if you have a 401k, an IRA, or any retirement savings, this is worth reading. Simply go to johnlovesgold.com and get your free copy. That's johnlovesgold.com. Or call toll-free 888-GOLD-053 to request your free copy. Healthcare in this country is heavily influenced by politics and large pharmaceutical companies. Politics change, access changes, and medications that were once easy to get can suddenly become harder to access. That's why you need a place like All Family Pharmacy. They're a licensed U.S. pharmacy focused on access and transparency, not on politics. In most areas of life, we prepare financially, for security, for emergencies. Preparing your medicine cabinet should be no different. Instead of getting a small supply and running back every 30 days for refills, you can order ahead and keep a 3 to 6 month supply on hand. I'm talking about antibiotics, antivirals, ivermectin, mebendazole, NAD+, blood pressure medications, and more than 300 other prescription meds. You choose what you need on their website. A licensed doctor reviews your request, prescribes it if appropriate, and your medicine ships directly to your door. Healthcare shouldn't depend on politics or on corporate gatekeeping. Stock up today and save 10% on your essential medications. What about the nuclear program, Mohammed? And let me preface this. The CIA said there was no nuclear program. They said it twice in two national intelligence estimates. The consensus of all of the American intelligence organizations was that there was no nuclear program. Ayatollah Khamenei issued a fatwa years ago forbidding the development of a nuclear weapon. Of course, the Israelis worked hard to convince the world that this was all a trick. And of course, there was a nuclear weapon. And ever since the 1990s, Iran was only 6 months away from developing this this nuclear weapon. Well, a friend of mine made a comment the other day that struck me as very important. We're not talking today about North Korea. Why are we not talking about North Korea? Because the North Koreans have a nuclear weapon and no one dares challenge them. So perhaps Iran should have been building a nuclear weapon. Or is that analysis incorrect, do you think?
Well, you are correct. They've been lying through their teeth about nuclear weapons in Iran for decades. And the evidence is there. But you wouldn't know this if you watched Western media. Even Trump's opponents, when it comes to Iran, they will toe the line. We saw during his State of the Union address, the only time where all the seals clapped together and simultaneously was when he was attacking Iran. So Netanyahu has been saying it for almost four decades. The Israeli regime has been saying it for more than four decades, the lie that Iran is on the verge of a nuclear weapon. And we saw that during the war where Saddam Hussein invaded Iran, where the West gave him chemical weapons, and I survived two of those chemical attacks, as you know. Ayatollah Khomeini, Ayatollah Khamenei's predecessor, gave a fatwa saying, well, he said, no, we will not produce chemical weapons. And of course, the West tried to prevent Iran from even purchasing gas masks. But then Ayatollah Khamenei gave his own fatwa about nuclear weapons. And the IAEA has, which has always been in Iran and has for years carried out very intrusive inspections, they have never discovered any evidence that Iran at any point was attempting to build a nuclear weapon, at any point. Because the United States says, the U.S. intelligence agencies say since 2003, and that in 2003, Ayatollah Khamenei gave a fatwa, and so a move to build a nuclear weapon stopped. The IAEA doesn't even confirm that. And they're the ones on the ground. There's never been any evidence. But at least the U.S. admits, U.S. intelligence, from 2003 to just a while back when Tulsi Gabbard under oath said that Iran is not developing nuclear weapons, it's clear that Iran's program is peaceful. So Witkoff is lying through his teeth. The U.S. Secretary of State is lying through his teeth, and Trump, of course, is lying as well. And then in any case, Trump just 8-9 months ago said he obliterated Iran's nuclear program. And now Wyckoff is saying within a week, Iran can make a weapon. It's obvious they're lying. This is 2003 all over again. The only difference is that Iran is not Iraq. Iran is not Libya. Iran isn't even Vietnam. And I think we've already seen that. The Trump regime thought that this would end in a day or two and that Iran would be in chaos. Well, we're approaching a week now, and Iranian missiles and drones continue to hammer and strike, and Iranian factories, underground factories, continue to produce. And Iran still hasn't used its new technology. It's using old drones and older missiles for them almost exclusively. And in addition to that, Iranians' regional allies are still not fully engaged. So if there's Iran has a lot of room for escalation.
What would that escalation look like?
I think the destruction of
would it include the use of Iran's hypersonic missiles,
which we have not seen. Iran has many weapon systems that they have not revealed yet. And by the way, with regards to nuclear weapons, a lot of people in Iran argue that. And two senior Iranian officials have said, two advisors to the leader, one who is now the chair of the Supreme National Security Council, before he was the chair, Dr. Larijani, said this, and so did Dr. Kharazi, who was a foreign minister for 8 years under President Khatami. Both were advisors to the leader. And they both said, Dr. Kharazi twice and Dr. Larijani once, that if there is an existential threat to Iran, then Iran's nuclear posture will change. But look how patient Iran is, and how, with regards to it's not acting irresponsibly, because a nuclear weapon creates all sorts of difficulties. All these dictatorships around Iran, Azerbaijan, Aliyev is an unstable dictator. In Kuwait, in Bahrain, in the Emirates, none of these, in Qatar, these are all family dictatorships. None of them are inherently stable regimes. Then they'll all want nuclear weapons. So that's one reason. And of course, there's the moral issue, which is the main reason. That's why Iran never produced chemical weapons. So, those who say that this fatwa has no meaning out of their ignorance of Shia Islam and of Islam, at least they can look back in history and see when the West was gassing us, we refused to gas their proxies. That's the difference between us and the West. Just as when they carry out genocide in Gaza, we support the Palestinians. That's the difference between us. When they strangle Cuba, we support the Cubans. When they take the Venezuelan nation hostage, we support the Venezuelans. When it comes to morality, it's actually the exact opposite of what the West says. Iran has always had the moral high ground. And Western propaganda has always been covering a reality that they are the ones who have no morality, zero morality. And we saw it in Ayatollah Khamenei's martyrdom. We saw it in the way in which they conducted themselves, and we see it when people are on the streets. Iran, I know you know quite a bit about Iran because of people close to you. Iran is a very highly educated country.
Yes, indeed.
Iran, there are more Persian language media outlets working against Iran than there are in Iran. Billions of dollars a year are being spent. Troll farms and bots and billions of dollars. So Iran is always hearing the disinformation. Iranians are always hearing the disinformation. Yet, despite all that, they come to the streets and remain steadfast under missile attacks. That's the difference between Iranians and Americans. Americans know nothing about Iran. They just hear what they just know what they hear on CNN or Fox News, which is all rubbish. They're all controlled by the Epstein class. The same people who won't let us figure out who Epstein's real contacts are, all the files that are hidden away and the redacted information. That's the reality of the West. I think people are waking up to this fact in the West. I'm confident in that. But the propaganda about Iran is something much more difficult to deal with, because first of all, people have been hearing this propaganda for decades. And second of all, Iran is far away. It's this other. So it's easier to demonize it. At home, people are waking up. They saw Gaza. They know about Zionism. But when it comes to Iran, it's a bit too difficult for them to recognize it. It's not what they thought it was.
Mohammed, what about prospects for a widening of the conflict? We hear about drones or missile attacks against Cyprus or against Azerbaijan, whether they're true or not. They just in terms of the propaganda value, it serves to broaden the conflict. Do you see it actually broadening? And what are the chances that the Russians and the Chinese get more involved?
Well, if you believe Tucker Carlson's sources, and he is, of course, probably the most well-connected journalist in the world when it comes to U.S. politicians and the U.S. military, he says that in Saudi Arabia and Qatar, they've arrested Israeli Mossad agents who wanted to plant bombs and carry out explosions. So Obviously the Israeli regime has a vested interest in creating chaos and turning countries against one another. And that's what the empire has done historically, divide and rule. So that is, and the Iranians have denied firing drones at Aramco. And I think they also said they did not fire anything at Azerbaijan. But in any case, if the war does expand for whatever reason, these regimes won't last. Aliyev is a dictator. He'll fall. Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, if this continues for a while, they won't survive. At least the regimes won't survive. And the Emirates will never be the Emirates again. None of these entities will ever be. And this is a huge loss for the United States, because these are key proxies of the United States, which the United States milks. They've been milking them since they've discovered oil and gas. So the financial punishment being inflicted on the United States is not just the rise in the price of oil. It's the loss of this purchasing power that these regimes have, which help the U.S. economy. And also, and I'm not an economist, so I should be very careful not to push this too far, but also it can be very dangerous for the U.S. dollar because of the petrodollar, because this the dollar, which is already in serious trouble, is powerful largely because of the fact that petroleum and natural gas is bought and sold largely in dollars. So there are lots of vulnerabilities for the United States. And these regimes, if they collapse, I think it'll be much worse for the United States. And the United States can't control this area. They can't bring troops. They cannot win a war on the ground. There's just too many. There's Iraq. There's the resistance in Iraq. There's Yemen. These are big countries. Yemen already fought a 7-week war. And during those 7 weeks, every day we were hearing from Trump that they're winning. We're hearing from Hegseth that they were wiping them all out. And then after 7 weeks, Trump said they capitulated and he walked away. And they hadn't capitulated. They won the war. Yemen, Ansarullah, or what they like to call the Houthis in the West, which is, in my opinion, more of a derogatory slur. But anyway, The point is that the United States is no longer in any position to wage that sort of war, and it will not win that war, and it will bring down the global economy, and it will bring down the U.S. economy for multiple reasons. So, yes, if the war expands, and Ayatollah Khamenei said it will be a regional war, and we're already seeing a regional war, but the Iranians and their allies are not escalating swiftly. They feel that time is on their side, that they can escalate whenever they feel the need to. They control the situation on the ground. And from the bombastic statements coming out of the White House and the Department of War, it's already clear that they're in trouble, talking all sorts of nonsense and saying, when Trump says, I'm going to choose the next leader. The United States, you know, he's living in fantasy land. And I think it's going to come crashing down. And I think Trump is going to be devastated. This is the end of his presidency.
Yeah, this is, I don't see how he gets out of this. I really don't. Not with any face or honor. I just don't see it. This was a terrible mistake.
This was, you know, one of the great crimes against humanity in the modern era. But since the United States and the Israelis are used to it in Gaza and in Lebanon and in Syria and in Libya, you know, it's not surprising. But the problem is that they chose the wrong enemy.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. Well, Mohammed, Godspeed. I hope that you and your family are able to remain safe, all Iranians, and I pray for a quick end to this thing. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. We do what we have to do. It's whether one survives or not, that's not really relevant. What's important is to do what's right. And inshallah, hopefully we'll all do what's right. God be with you.
Thank you, and with you.